Gerard Mayo talking about the guys he looks up to over there in Houston. D'Amico Ryans, Nick Caserio. It's around here when Caserio was here. The Houston Texans, whatever you think about them, had a bad team and made them into a good team in the span of 1 year. And that was with two draft picks in the top three, a quarterback and the edge rusher, who we'll get to when we do the entire Houston Texans breakdown in their scouting report at 4:30, which I'm looking forward to. But this is the comp. I think when people talked about Patriots drafting a quarterback and the arguments were about, well, you shouldn't draft a quarterback, you should draft something else, you should build up an offense, you should do something before you just airdrop a QB into this offense because this offense is so bad. And people would always come back. Jones and I argued about this all the time. People would come back and say, well, what about the Houston Texans? Look at the Houston Texans. They had a bad team with Davis Mills and an offense that didn't work, and Nico Collins wasn't anything special. And, you know, you did have Laremy Tunsil, who's a better offensive lineman than anybody on the Patriots here, but outside of him, it wasn't like the Texans were some great spot that were just a quarterback away from competing. People didn't talk about him like that. I didn't think of him like that. Nobody thought of him like that. C.J. Stroud changed everything. And is Drake May the kind of guy who can go in there and change everything? Now, when you look up to someone like the Nick Caserio, I think this past offseason was the Houston Texans was a tour de force. They brought in a 1,000-yard receiver. They brought in a 1,000-yard rusher. They brought in an edge rusher who had 10-plus sacks last year. I thought they had one of the best NFL offseasons I can remember in the last 10 years. I think the Houston Texans just had. And that's after building this thing up from nothing. I mean, they were a last-place team. And they brought in a new coach who was a defensive-minded head coach. They brought in a rookie quarterback who was extremely inexperienced at Ohio State and barely played, and people thought was going to be too raw of a prospect, unlike that can't-miss Bryce Young over at Alabama, which in retrospect is funny to think about now. And now look at them. They're 4-1. They were 10-7 last year. They got smoked in the playoffs. Fine. A rookie in the playoffs. I'm not going to beat them up too much. But they're off to a good start again this year with a great offseason, and it seems like everything's coming up Houston. Can the Patriots, with Drake May, become or even surpass maybe the Houston Texans in a year's time?
A year from now. Not this
year. I mean,
the
clock starts now, right? Drake May's playing, clock starts now.
Oh, okay. I'm fine with it. I think you will be in the conversation of competitive AFC teams a year from now. Now,
not
that,
this year.
That no. Okay. No, not at all. The roster's just not good enough. The talent's just not there, but the opportunities are going to be there. You talk about offseason and nailing the hell out of an offseason. I think you're going to have an opportunity. Now, you're going to have to probably nail the hell out of the offseason, and that's putting some faith in. He's talking about Nick Caserio. You need to put some faith in Elliott Wolf and the decisions that will be made by this organization. I would caution people, obviously, Houston bottomed out worse, than you did, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember how dysfunctional they were with Jack Easterby and everything that was going on with him being involved with that organization, if you remember how quickly they went from MVP caliber quarterback Deshaun Watson,
yep,
defensive player of the year caliber pass rusher J.J. Watt,
mm-hmm,
Hall of Fame wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, and like then all of a sudden you're a Texans fan and you're like, wait, what happened? I don't have a jersey to buy. I'm not proud of my team in any way. I'm kind of embarrassed by what's going on. There was talk they were going to hire, who's the backup quarterback who had never coached, and they were going to make him the head coach because he was like a Bible guy, and they believed the Bible was running the organization.
Oh, yeah, because of the McNair
McCown,
family.
McNown, one of those.
Luke McCown?
One of those guys.
Or Josh McCown?
Josh McCown.
Yeah.
And people thought it was because he was a religious guy.
Easterby was there. Remember, Easterby was running
the show. That's
what I mean.
People were wondering if it was too I don't know if this is offensive, like too Christian. Like, was it being run based on Christian values and people that believed in the Bible and church and not like as a business and as a football team and doing? And then all of a sudden, boom, you turn a corner and you're reaping the benefits of some of those assets that you collected in the Deshaun Watson trade, and you've made some good moves and all of that. But I have always believed the quarterback changes everything. I thought Baker Mayfield turned the Browns around, mm-hmm, for a short period
of time. He did. They went from 0 wins to 7 wins that season.
Like,
yeah.
People always look at these single-win teams. Like, Belichick sent Jamie Collins to Siberia.
That's right.
Cleveland. And when Garoppolo was here, people were always like, why would Garoppolo want to go to Cleveland? Because if Garoppolo's as good as he thinks he is, he'll change it. He'll turn it around quickly. And I believe Drake May believes in himself at that level. I think if you got Drake May to just be 100% the cocky kid who probably talks smack with his brothers in the basement, I think he believes he is him. He is that guy. He is the C.J. Stroud that can turn everything around, and people will want to play with me, and I'm going to make plays, and we're going to bring modern, fun football to New England. And if he is that, then you are going to turn a corner. Almost regardless, if he's that, that'll actually give you a little allowance to make a couple mistakes. Maybe not have to hit sure. all $130 million worth of free agent spending. Maybe not have to hit your first four draft picks next
right.
year.
But you're going to have to spend. You're going to have to go out and do it.
Well, they have to spend by rule.
You can't say, well, we got our quarterback.
Well, no,
so
but
here.
They have to spend by rule. Or they're going to be right. penalized for whatever the penalty. I don't
and
even
not
know
just
the,
getting your
does.
Own, not just re-signing your own guys. I mean,
no,
like you have to get marquee talent. You have to go out and
who's
and
left to re-sign? I don't even know how much
true.
Is left to re-sign.
Not much.
There's literally nothing. So they're going to have to go out and spend money, and they're going to have to go out and make some high draft picks. But if Drake May is who I think he is, you have begun the process on this week. This week in the Lord's year 2024, you have begun the process towards success, towards turning the corner, towards the rebuild. And maybe we'll do what Houston does. Maybe we'll look back and say, huh, I know Bill petered out, but he did give you Barmore. Did you hear Mayo talking about he was more optimistic today
about
than he
Barmore
was?
About Barmore coming back, yeah.
Yes. Bill gave
and
you Barmore.
And Barmore tweeted something, too.
Yeah.
A little, like hourglass,
yeah.
yeah.
He gave you Stevenson. Right. Maybe Bill gave you a couple of pieces that we'll be looking back on as the Nico Collins or the Laramie Tunsil, the Mike Onwenu. Maybe you go, oh, now that he's got a quarterback and we've filled in a little bit of the rest of the line, Bill gave you a few little things that are sort of like the Houston roots of success. But you need the big kahuna. You need the main piece, right? Like this is like a puzzle where you have little pieces.
Yeah.
And then right in the center is a piece that you're like, where is it? Where the hell is this one piece? And maybe you have him.
Big Drake May-sized piece.
Yep.
Gross. John is in the car. Go ahead, John.
You always take it a weird place.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm so excited we get Drake May. It's like week one again. We're starting over. It's fresh. It's like we haven't, like, they never lost three games. They didn't have, like, you know, no offensive game plan whatsoever and just do whatever. It's like a fresh start. We're going to give game balls out next week or this week when they win to everybody. It's great.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
I feel sarcasm here.
I'm hearing some sarcasm. Am I sensing that right, or are you being earnest here,
yeah.
John?
No, it's super sarcasm.
Okay,
because you know what?
Stick it.
I hope Drake May goes out there, and I hope he's really good. I hope he's great. I hope he does a great job. It's entirely possible that Drake May could go out there and look good, and the team still looks like a bag of crap.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, this is why most of the people wanted to see Drake May from week one, was because we were accepting that this team is a bag of crap, and that even if you put Drake May out there, they probably aren't going to win more than five games. And we're fine with that. But what we're not fine with is with this whole rigmarole of the plan, the plan, the plan, the plan. Like, I think Jerod Mayo realized that there was no singular plan this week. He realized that there was about 900 different plans because it's front office by committee, and ultimately it doesn't matter whose plan or if it's his plan. It's Bob Kraft and what he wants, and that's what's going to happen because it was clear when all the reporters like, oh, here comes Rap Sheet. Here comes Albert Breer. Here comes all the Stacey James finally printed things. Like, this is how it's going to go. Oh, we're so excited. It's refreshed energy. Like, yay. It's so good. Like, nah, not buying it.
All right. Thanks for the call, John. Good call.
The energy, he's wearing orange.
Yeah.
He's got orange underwear on, orange socks, orange shorts, the whole damn thing. Because that energy was phenomenal. I was with
you. It was. It was all sarcastic, but it was good energy.
But it's energy. It's sarcastic energy. And I do. He
could
says,
be the name of the show. Sarcastic energy in the afternoon.
I don't hate it.
It's not
better
a bad
than
one.
The afternoon show.
It's better than that. Yeah.
He's referencing, clearly he believes there's dysfunction in the front office and in the team still.
Mm-hmm.
Houston was the most dysfunctional franchise in football. If we want to continue the comparisons, actually, maybe I can't say most. Washington might have been the most dysfunctional.
I would say Washington was worse, yeah.
Houston was a top
Houston
five dysfunctional team.
Sure.
With Jack Easterby, Bill O'Brien, the other GM, was it Rick Smith?
Yeah.
Didn't he get, like, cancer and they kind of forced him out? Or his wife got cancer
something
and they forced him
like
out?
Something that happened,
there was
yeah.
a weird story there.
O'Brien got fired. They brought in Cornell, remember? Like, he was the interim coach.
They were dysfunctional at the ownership level, the GM level, the president level, the coach level. Remember that they went.
They had four coaches in 4 years.
Yeah, because they hired the David Culley guy.
David Culley.
Then Lovie Smith with the beard, like Santa Claus, to come in there. And then he gave them the greatest gift ever because he won that game late in the year. Mm-hmm. They didn't get the number one pick. They were going to take Bryce Young. And now they have the best young quarterback in football in C.J. Stroud.
They owe it all to Lovie.
Lovie. Santa Claus Lovie.
Yeah, 100%. And you're right. I mean, that was a team that was four wins. You could count on maybe four wins for about three straight years after they made a couple of playoff appearances. With O'Brien towards the end there and Deshaun Watson, like, he got them. They didn't do much, but he got Watson and those guys to the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
O'Brien did. And then it bailed out there in 2020. They were a four-win team for 3 years and a three-win team, you're right, in that Lovie Smith season. And then, boom, the right quarterback, and all of a sudden you got a whole different story going on there. That was a team going nowhere. That was a team really going nowhere. And the probably in a lot of ways, I think, people expecting them to just be in the basement for years and years and years. Patriots have had two, maybe three pretty dysfunctional years. I'm not going to go back to the first one because they were a playoff team with a Pro Bowl, in quotes, quarterback, and things went horribly off the rails after that. And this season so far has started off as more of the same of that. I mean, like, the Patriots aren't as dysfunctional as I'd say the Texans were over that 3-year stretch, but they've also blown out their legendary coach. It was also the GM. They brought in all these new people who aren't really new people because they were already here and re-signed all their own guy. Like, they've gone about it very differently than Houston did, I think, when Houston started their big renaissance. Like, I think there was a very different, from the top, you know, from ownership, I think there was a different directive that went out to the Patriots than what you saw in Houston.
And when they had success, it was year three of Caserio. I just looked it up. He got there in 21. So 21, 22, 23, they find success. Now 24, they're kind of riding that success and adding on to it. So 2 years Caserio had sort of to start the process of his rebuild or put his stamp. And I know it was craziness because Deshaun Watson was one of the weirdest situations in the history of the game that he had to deal with. But I would that's where I would just say the dysfunction you're seeing from the Patriots, is it dysfunction or is it just the normal course of events when you have a full organizational turnover?
Right.
You know, like, don't some people have to kind of rise to the top? And then Gerard Mayo said it. Remember when he introduced his coaching staff and he's like, I'm sure some of these guys won't be here next year. You know, that's how it works. You bring guys in and they don't know. Like, he was kind of acknowledging that transitions of power take some time, and you're not going to hit 100.
Right.
You're not going to hit 100% on all your hires. So is it dysfunctional? That seems like a strong description. But it'll be less dysfunctional if on Sunday I get my way and you go, oh, my God, Drake May is so good.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to erase everything. By the way, to the texter says, oh, by the way, dummy, Texans didn't get waxed in the playoffs to beat the Browns in round one. How'd they do in the next round? That's what I was talking about. The game where they lost by four touchdowns to the Baltimore Ravens, who absolutely had C.J. Stroud in the blender. That's what I meant. I mean, yeah, they beat Joe Flacco. That was a nice win. But when they got to a real team, they got their asses kicked, is the point I was trying to make. They still made it to the playoffs, and they won a round, and I was using that all to pump them up and talk about how good they were. And that wasn't really up for debate, that they got smoked in that Baltimore game, because they did. That's
dummy.
617-779-7937. Mason in Marshfield. Go ahead.
Hey, I think Drake May should not be starting for this Sunday.
Why not?
I don't think he should be starting because, you know, it's kind of like Mac Jones. Mac Jones, they pushed him, they rushed him too early, and look where he's now. He's in Jacksonville doing nothing.
Yeah, but Mac Jones' rookie year was a Pro Bowler, and they made the playoffs, Mason.
Yeah, but I think we need to give Drake May a couple years.
No.
What are you, Orlovsky?
Yeah, Mason Orlovsky over there. A couple years? He's going to sit on the bench for a couple years? You know that you have to make a decision on whether you want to extend them like 2 years from now, right? Like, you're going to have to start thinking about that, and I think you're probably better off seeing what he looks like before you just drop him in there. And the Mac Jones analogy, for many, many reasons, I don't think is a good one. Number one, because I think May is a very different player from him. He has a very different personality from Mac Jones. And number two, Mac Jones's rookie year was the pinnacle probably of his career. That was the top. That was as good as his career is going to get was that first year. They didn't rush him out there. His rookie year was his best season by far. The other ones all combined weren't as good as his rookie year. If you took each game and did that, I mean, he was a basket case after that. So it wasn't about him getting rushed out there. That's not what ruined him, I don't think. No one thinks that. It was the whole changing of the offensive coordinators and his attitude and really, I think, just a lot of the factors like that. But no, it's not like Mac Jones at all. This is nothing like Mac Jones. No, it isn't.
And you know what just hit me? Remember when people were telling us, and I don't know if you remember this, but specifically people told me the reason that Drake May wasn't going to play as compared to why Mac Jones did play is the quality of the guy he was competing with.
Mm-hmm.
That Cam Newton was toast and wasn't good anymore, and Jacoby Brissett was a better quarterback at this point. Remember that?
Yep.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was absolutely asinine logic, and there was no fact to it. There's no truth to it. That was people just saying, getting to the end point and then reverse engineering it. Well, we need Jacoby Brissett to start, so how can I explain why he's starting? Oh, well, he's better at this point in his career. And
spin zone.
It was spin zoning without the freaking audio, without still using our lead and our imaging. Like, that was, that I find that more annoying in retrospect. Don't you-know-what on me and tell me it's raining. You were you-know-whatting on me.
Yeah.
Ken told me I can't say that anymore.
Can't say you-know-whatting?
Yeah.
That's too bad. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Quick break. When we come back, we'll say rest in peace to the plan. The plan with Drake May. We will... what? We're not doing that? Okay, never mind.
Well, I want to work on it a little more.
All right, fine. We'll discuss that. And also, Alex Van Pelt. We'll basically do everything but Drake May here, all right? We'll do everything but Drake May. Can the defense bounce back, the rest of the offense around May? We know what this Drake May situation is. Let's talk about the rest of the team right after Stiz tells you what's trending. All right, that was Alex Van Pelt talking about Drake May in practice and how he was 6-for-6 against the Blitz. Very exciting. It looks like Ramondre Stevenson has been ruled out.
Yes.
Officially.
Yes.
Although I haven't seen an official announcement, it seems like there are several reports coming in that he will not play. I think we all sort of expected that. Mayo today said that if he couldn't go, what he was planning to do with the, as you mentioned, with the practice squad.
Terrell Jennings or Kevin Harris, step up.
Right. And either one of those guys, I mean, listen, I don't know anything about the Jennings kid. I know that Harris is a decent running back who they drafted a couple years ago in the late round, sixth round, I think, something like that.
Yeah, and he's never really done much.
Yeah, he hasn't. He had that one great play in the preseason, but that's about it. And, that's what you're going to be looking at. With no Ramondre Stevenson now, that will change things for Drake May. That'll change things for the offense. I'm sure that the plan is going to deviate a little bit from what they were hoping the first game for May would look like. But I don't want to talk about Drake May here. I wanted to talk about everything except May, because while we all are excited about Drake May and what he's going to do and how he's going to look and everything, there's other parts of this team. A lot of other parts of this team that still need work, that still need to be playing better, that still need to elevate themselves if this team really wants to compete. And I think we can start with the defense. With the defense right now, you're looking at a Houston Texans team that is not setting the world on fire offensively. Despite all the work that they did, bringing in Mixon, bringing in Diggs, both of those trades, I think they got Mixon for like nothing. They got him for like a seventh round pick, had to give up a second to get Diggs in order to help out their young quarterback who already looked like he was something special there last year with just Nico Collins and Tank Dell and the tight end there, Schultz. And that's it. And so this defense, this Patriots defense, has a chance to bounce back a little bit here against an underachieving Texans offense that hasn't exactly picked up where they left off last year. And some people thought not even picking up where they left off, but improving and becoming more than what they were last year with these extra weapons that they have now for C.J. Stroud. What do you think's been the biggest issue for the defense in this first month plus?
I would say consistency. I feel like they've done everything well at times, but never really married it all up together. Like, remember we were raving about the tackling in week one.
Right.
Then all of a sudden the tackling was a problem. The tackling sucked. And coverage at times feels like it's been really good, but then the rush doesn't get there. Or when the rush gets there, the coverage hasn't been good. Or a guy rolls out. The one consistency is they've allowed guys to kind of run a little bit at quarterback and throw on the run, get to the middle of the field, throw to tight ends and guys in the middle of the field. But I just feel like no one area has been, I mean, maybe the most consistent thing has been Christian Gonzalez.
Yeah.
I feel like he's been probably your most consistently competitive football player. He's continuing to get the accolades from various people online, and then you add the little social media love from Tyreek Hill after going against him last week. So, but I would say consistency. They haven't, and not to play DeMarcus Covington's side of the road, but we play best as a what?
unit. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've played as a unit for very often throughout the five games. It's been this piece. Oh, the secondary's playing well. And then they've had injuries at various places. I'm not going to disregard. You lose Bentley. That's a blow to the linebackers.
Yep.
You're without both safeties. That's a blow to the safeties. Looks like you're going to get Duggar back, I think, this week. So that'll help in the middle of the defense.
Mixon's playing, by the way, it looks
Mixon
like.
Mixon is playing?
Yeah, it looks like Mixon's
going to
play.
You see him going off about the he got hurt on a hip drop tackle. And he got really like adamant about how it's so ridiculous because the guy only got fined like $15,000 or like they didn't take it seriously, wasn't even a flag. And mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there's no consistency in the league in terms of player safety. And he's right. Now, I happen to be anti-hip drop tackle penalties. I think it's a tackle. It hurts. Like, I'm sorry. I don't want you to get hurt. But
you don't think they should ban it?
I don't. I think okay. It used to be called a tackle. And then they named it and made it like this boo boogeyman
It did
thing.
Happen quickly. Yeah. And
it's just like the horse collar.
Right.
When Roy Jones started doing that for the Cowboys and he broke somebody's leg and everybody's like, oh, that's not right. And it was like, well, I mean, it's a tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I don't. Keon White did it last week. And in the old days, your job was to tackle the person.
Right.
Whatever, other than the face mask, basically, whatever you could grab in order to get the other guy down on the ground, that was your job. Find a way. Because you were paid to do that. And now it's like, I need you to think about where you put your helmet, where you put your hands, how you drop your hips. Like, it's so unfair to defensive players. It really is.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I understand why they do some of these things. Like, they took away helmet to helmet and all this other stuff. But I think in terms of what really injures people, like, those horse collar tackles are dangerous. I mean, that's a dangerous thing to pull a guy
sure.
down from behind like that.
You know what's dangerous?
The hip drops were
football.
A little different. I know, but there's ways to make it less dangerous. Like, should they bring back hitting with the helmet to helmet? Like, they shouldn't do that, right? That's dangerous. It's a dangerous sport.
No.
You think they should?
I just...
You don't think they should penalize helmet to helmet hits?
I think it's really difficult to do.
It isn't. They do it all the time.
No, but to do it right. Because you see both guys lower, and then it's like they pick one. Or the receiver goes to protect himself late, and the tackler was already tackling. Or the quarterback slides late, and the guy's like, I was about to tackle you, and now you're sliding, so I'm going to make contact with your head. I'm going to get a 15-yard penalty and probably a $45,000 fine when you changed your course of motion, right? Like, I just think it's so hard to do, and we don't need to get into this now. Now is not the time for this
Fine.
Argument, because this is going to go down a rabbit hole of anger for me, because I hate the picking and choosing who's valuable, who, you know, who's
Fine.
Whatever.
Well, the defense, I mean, the rules are the same for everybody here, for the Patriots, whether they're, you know, the horse collaring or hip dropping or whatever, crown of the helmet, any of that stuff, they have to go by the same rules as everybody else. And so far this year, they've been pretty lackluster on defense.
Yep.
And that was the one thing we all sort of expected would carry over from last year. I think the Texans expected their offense to be good from last year, and they haven't really been so far. The Patriots, I think a lot of people, I certainly expected the one thing you didn't have to worry about so much, and they took that entire idea and attitude and applied it to their offseason. The one thing you didn't have to worry about too much was the defense. Fix the offense. The defense will be fine. Once you make the offense a little better, get a new quarterback and some new skill players, then you can rise up and have them be up there equal with the defense. And instead, it seems like the offense still sucks and the defense is taking a big step back.
It has, and it was everybody whistling past the Belichick graveyard,
right.
Basically. Steve Belichick, the play caller, gone. And whatever you think of him and his faces and his man buns and his ponytails, and he called the plays for a number of years for a defense that was good.
He had a mullet. Right? He didn't have a man bun.
Oh, wait, no, he puts it in a man bun sometimes.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he does the little thingy.
He had the Squidbillies mullet that I...
What the hell's a Squidbilly?
You remember seeing that show on Adult Swim?
No.
It's about these hillbilly squids, and they all have these, like, mullets, and it's, you know, it's a funny show.
And his son has a mullet, if you saw the pictures on social media with Bill and Steve and the son. The grandson.
The grandson, yeah.
The tiny
Belich with also a mullet. Interesting.
Yeah, it's okay. and it's a good-looking mullet. I'm not going to say he's a cute kid with a good-looking mullet. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I think about the parenting.
That game where Steve was licking his lips a lot, that was the Brady game, right? Wasn't that Patriot? Was that Mac Jones versus Brady? I'm pretty sure it was. Brady with the
Maybe.
Bucks when they played. I think that was that game.
What'd you think of that?
Of him making those faces?
Yeah.
Thought it was really weird.
I thought he was on something.
Looked like he was, yeah. It looked like he was pumped up, you know? Like
there was something weird pumping through his veins.
Like he had, you know, the smelling salts going
right? My face is tingling. I can't feel my face. What's going on here?
There
was something weird there. Anyway, but
you guys play that new Avicii song?
You whistle past the graveyard of him leaving and Bill leaving and just assume it's going to be better to the point. Remember it was a joke? Remember when Elliot Wolf was like, I apologize to the defense for not drafting any players or something?
Right.
He made some like, well, it's not really funny now because your defense
has been part of the problem, not the solution. They haven't been horrific like the offense, but every time they needed a play, have they gotten it?
Nope.
I would say no.
They
couldn't get off the field. The Seahawks game was the one that I thought was the worst. You punt, you get them at the 16-yard line. It's like, oh, so if we get a 3-and-out here, we punt back. Maybe we take over at whatever, the 40, get a little return. We're in field goal range. We win the – and right down the field, and the game's over. That can't happen.
No.
And I know you lost Barmore and didn't expect that. I don't know what you expected with Judon. You thought he'd be here or not, and you lost him. So two of your three best players are not on the field. I get it. And then you roll into these injuries and all of that. But you're right. It was just presumed that defense will be fine. Mm-hmm. Defense will be fine.
Don't worry about that.
It's not fine. Nothing's
Gerard
fine.
Gerard Mayo was a defense. He was part of the defensive coordinator group of people with the two Belichicks and him. Like, they were all there. It'll just carry right. It's the same guys, basically the same team, same unit out there. What I think the big drop-off has been in losing Belichick, and I don't think that they should have kept him around or anything. I think that they needed to fire him. But game planning? Game planning seems much different this year, doesn't it? They don't go after the one guy on the other side. They don't have and it didn't always work, but it seemed like they were going to take one guy out of the game on offense or defense, sometimes both, even when they weren't a good team, and that they were able to do that a lot. Sometimes it would just get overwhelmed, the team would beat them, but like there was always a game plan that you felt at least somewhat confident in because it was Bill, and he was the one doing the game planning, and he sort of knew what strings to pull and all of that. Didn't always work, and he didn't always have the right personnel, but from a coaching game planning perspective, you always, even at the end, had pretty good faith in Bill Belichick.
And I still would. I mean, if you could tell me I can get him to run my defense, I don't even need him to, like, call the plays, oversee my defense, be a consultant, work Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays, right? Come in, install the game plan, show up on Sunday to advise. I think he can still do that at an elite level, especially just defense.
Yeah.
Forget offense, forget press conferences, forget all that other crap. But obviously that was never going to be an option or be realistic. It surprised me at the presumption of success for this defense. And then as the questions grew, it's like people still had presumptions of success. Oh, they played without Judon last year. What's going to be different this year? I'll tell you what's going to be different. You're not very good.
Yeah.
Like, they over...
I mean, you weren't good last year either, but
Gonzalez didn't play last year. Like, whatever. No, like, those matter, and you're not that good, and you've lost a little bit of talent, a little bit of coaching, a little bit of consistency, whatever those factors are. And now, are they even mediocre? I think they're a below-average defense.
The Patriots?
Yeah. No, defense.
I'd say they're... Below average.
They're fine minus.
Yeah.
They're not fine plus. They're fine minus.
There's a little bit of breaking news here. Don't hit the sounder. Patriots are signing Brendan Schooler to a 3-year, $9 million extension.
Good for him.
With $3.6 million guaranteed. And he can make up to 10.5 with incentives. And he's locked up for a while. And he's a very good special teams player. And that's all great. He might be the best player on the team this year, unfortunately. 617-779-7937. Let's go to Cotto in Boston. Go ahead, Cotto.
All right. First time calling.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
First time calling your show. I want to start by saying congratulations. I think you do a great job. It's very well deserved.
Thank you very much, Cotto. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. So what I want to talk about is obviously I think it's, you know, I think Drake May should have been starting week one. But now that we got him in there, I think that, you know, Alex Van Pelt, it's his time to step up more than anybody, because if anybody's in the hot seat, it's him. He's gotta have plays ready to go, especially now that perhaps Ramondre Stevenson won't be playing. We need to get the ball to the receivers. Got to be quick, and if he can't do that, then we got to get him out of here and get anybody in that can. I feel like the last couple of years we should be rebuilding the team, and we've done everything but that, aside from the draft picks with Christian Gonzalez, Drake May, and, you know, Jalen Polk. But I feel like we've stepped back rather than stepped forward. And I think that's a big problem. And, you know, you go to a Patriots game and you see more jerseys from the other team than you do yours. And that can't keep happening. So
yeah, Cotto, thanks for the call. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for calling in. All that's very nice, and nice words there as well. You know, finding someone who can't, I don't know that. I think with Drake May in particular now, since you did keep him on the bench for 5 weeks, you can't just say after a couple of weeks, it's not going to work for him. You got to bring him along. You have to bring him along, and you can't expect him to be good right away. I don't think that that's fair to him, especially when these other three quarterbacks who are now all playing well and whose teams are all winning didn't get off to great starts themselves. They all had
their lumps coming in, and May's going to have his, and these guys all still have theirs, too. There's rookie walls. I'm not expecting all three of those guys to lead their teams to the playoffs this year. You know, if Bo Nix's Broncos make it to the playoffs this year, that's going to be a big surprise to me. Same with the Bears, and really, you know, same with the Washington, good as they look right now. They're in a very tough division, and it's going to be hard for them to do that week in and week out against good teams. So, you know, we'll see. I just think that for May, if we're comparing him with those guys in particular, with the other rookies from this season, just remember, they didn't get off to great starts. They're doing good now. Their first couple games, first one, two games, weren't great.
And there's dog performances coming for all of them.
Yep.
I'm a firm believer in that. But also, he brings up Alex Van Pelt. Right now, so two things here. Right now, I think you have to just lock in Drake May and Alex Van Pelt. Kind of like Curran said yesterday, unless something crazy happens, those two guys are paired up for the next 12 games. And then we'll assess it at the end of the year. If Drake May's good, bad. If Alex Van Pelt's good, bad. Like, I think you owe that to them. Because if you start jerking things around in another, oh, well, Drake May's in, but we still don't like Alex Van Pelt, so now we're going to give him a different. And I don't know if you noticed it today. I thought it was, it's been very interesting how Jerod Mayo kind of avoids Ben McAdoo questions and is very, like, distant and vague in terms of what he does. Oh, you know, he does some projects and some stuff that I would say is kind of assistant head coach. Mm-hmm. And then he swerved away from talking about Ben McAdoo and how much he might be involved with Drake May. And I don't know what to make of that. I don't know if he's fully loyal and invested in Alex Van Pelt, and Alex Van Pelt is running the offense, and I'm not going to bring up Ben McAdoo to step on Alex Van Pelt's toes, or if there's something weird there. I just... Something smells there.
Something sniffs.
Something
not passing the sniff test.
Pass the sniff test with the way Jerod Mayo doesn't seem to care for any questions about Ben McAdoo, who, if he's being honest, is his highest ranking assistant coach, because he said he's kind of an assistant head coach.
Maybe he doesn't like him.
Maybe.
Maybe it's as simple as that. He just doesn't like the guy.
Is he still there? I don't even. Maybe he's gone.
Could be. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. One guy on that defense, Keon White, who a lot has been asked for, and he's committed a lot of penalties. You just mentioned the horse collar. Had some comments to Nesson about those penalties, and I didn't like him. We'll get to that next. Ooh, name this tune. He has no idea.
Nas.
That's right, but he helped you.
No.
He clearly helped you. I saw him.
Nas, he didn't.
Nas, what? What song by Nas? I'm watching you. Steve's theme. It's a
I'm
good
checking
song.
All my
very,
screens.
Very good song. This song was in The Departed, I think. Right? When they were driving around, he's driving around with the cousin?
Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, you could have been a little quicker, E from Brockton.
Yeah, good song. Anyways, that was Keon White, sacking Geno Smith right there. Keon White off to a good start this year, except for all the penalties. And there's a little thing I saw on Nesson this past week that I was reading, and I was like, it gave me the ick, I guess. You know, I was just reading it going, man, this sucks. I wish he didn't have this attitude. And I like Keon White, and I picked Keon White to be the MVP of the team this year, so I'm not saying any of this as a Keon White hater. That is not what I am. I like him. I like his game. But I don't like this. White was flagged for a horse collar tackle in the first play of the second half, was called for roughing the passer three plays later against Miami. They gifted the struggling offense, who scored just three first-half points, 30 yards. They capitalized on a 32-yard field goal that capped an eight-play, 56-yard drive. In a game between two offenses who struggled to score points, penalties didn't help. You win some, you lose some, White told Nesson. I really don't care. Really don't care. Okay, first of all, thanks, Melania. Second of all, you lost the game, you know. White went on, as long as I'm running the ball, running to the ball, being aggressive, you're going to get penalties. But I'm not going to compromise the style of player that I am. Obviously, the style player I am, the league is trending towards a less aggressive league. I don't care. I'm still going to be old school, heavy hitter. You take the fines when they come, but you just keep playing. Because I feel like, personally, if I stop playing fast and stop playing aggressively, I'm not going to be dominant. It's not really a big conversation that we have, White said. Mayo and I haven't really talked about it at all, to be honest. But at the end of the day, it's my job to be a professional. It's true. It is your job to be a professional. And maybe, I don't know, to stop committing so many penalties that lead to points for the other team in a one-score game. Like, that's a terrible attitude. I'm sorry, I don't care. I'm still going to play this way. If I get whistled for penalties, I get whistled for penalties. That's not what you want to hear, is it? And the fact that he's like, yeah, Mayo hasn't even, we haven't really talked about it at all. DeMarcus Covington talked with the Midday Show today, and he was basically the same thing. He's like, yeah, we don't like the penalties, but what are we going to do, take them out? Like, Keon White's good. He's not Aaron Donald yet. Like, he still has a lot to prove here as a player in his second year. He's a good player, and he could be a disruptive force on that line for sure. But if he's a liability because he's out there horse collaring guys and hitting quarterbacks late and all that other stuff, extending drives for other teams, I don't care if he's big and strong and, you know, the sacking the QB. Like, you have to find some balance, but at the very least, you have to care. You have to care that you're getting penalized and that you're extending drives for these other teams and giving them points. How can you not care about that?
Well, I don't think he handled it well. I think he was trying to say, to play the way I play, I have to be aggressive, I have to be physical. And I actually give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt on the horse collar, because that was a guy who was faster than him that was about to pull away from him. It was like, either I grab whatever the hell I can grab or I ain't getting him. And I can feel for that. The roughing the passer was unacceptable. I heard DeMarcus Covington talking about it. They talk about all the strike zone. Like, there's rules.
Yep.
You can't hit below here. You can't hit above here. It's not that hard.
And you can't come down on the guy. Like,
right.
I mean, yeah.
There's a certain way you have to do business. And it'd be like you and I just saying bad words all the time.
Well, there's a certain way I do radio, and I'm not going to change for anybody. And you pay the fines, and you move on.
And then we'd be out of a job. And no offense, but... I wanted to look. How many sacks?
I was going to make a joke there. I'm not going to.
Probably don't. You might get in trouble.
You sounded like someone who used to work here.
Okay, let's not. How many sacks did Keon White have in the first two games?
Five and a half or something like that? Four and a half?
Four.
Yeah, okay.
You know how many he has now?
Four.
Four.
Yeah.
So Mr. Badass, Billy Badass out there, like, oh, I'm just not going to change the way I... Like, you haven't done anything in 3 weeks. Like, you came out like a bat out of hell. If I were going to read that, you know what I might read? Defenses noticed, hey, this Keon White guy, we might want to pay attention. I mean, offensive lines.
Right.
Realized, we're not just going to let you win matchups all the time on the inside, which you were doing early in the season. So you were a positive in those first couple games. You could argue you've been, with the penalties, net negatives. This team has been in a close game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think 30 yards worth of penalties matter?
Of course it matters.
Okay, like that.
One of them led directly to points.
It's a third of the damn field.
Yeah.
Like, that's field flipping penalties there for him. So I would like to think, having talked to him enough, I would like to think he didn't express himself the way he wanted to express himself there. I think he, if you gave him a mulligan and asked him to sort of do over. But I also, in a way, agree with DeMarcus Covington. This team's not talented enough or deep enough to just...
Agreed.
It's what we talked about with Stevenson.
Yeah.
You're going to bench your best back?
You can't.
You'll show him. He won't fumble. We won't get any rushing yards, but he won't fumble.
Here was Covington earlier today. He was asked about this by Kiefin Jones.
No, I would say for Keon, again, like, playing fast, playing aggressive, and playing within the framework of the defense. That's really the name of the game for our entire defense. And I won't just single out Keon on that. We have all had our share mistakes on defense. So that's one of the things we always talk about, being disciplined, playing penalty free, playing together as a unit. Like, all of us as a defense continue to preach that every single day. So we love Keon, man. He brings a great piece of the game for us. Physical, mental toughness, everything, all of the above. We love what he does for us.
I love Keon too. I do. I think he's a good player, and he was great in those first two games. You're right. He hasn't done much in the last three. And even in the second half of that Seattle game, I feel like the Seahawks kind of figured out how to neutralize him a little bit after he had those first two sacks, including the one we just played coming into here. You can game plan against Keon White. It's not like he's this unstoppable foe. He's not Lawrence Taylor coming off the edge here. Like, he's a good player. He's a young player. He's a strong guy, and he's a little out of control, and I think he needs to reel it in. And if that means, you know, if that means that he doesn't come barreling in, fists a-flying, like going after the quarterback like he was against Snoop Huntley there, oh well. You know, I don't want him to lose his aggressiveness or lose his physicality, but you got to lose the penalties. You just have to.
Yeah, and we just argued about it. I am as defensive player friendly as anyone, and I think they have to play full speed. You can't play half speed. But is there a way to get to the quarterback without getting a penalty? There absolutely is.
Sure.
And other guys have mastered it at a much higher level. Don't tell me TJ Watt is not a high motor, aggressive, physical.
Miles Garrett, pretty like, big, yeah.
If those guys can figure it out, you can figure it out too, Keon. And the two together was unfortunate. Because, again, I do give you a little bit of a pass on just reaching out and grabbing whatever you can save face with on the horse collar. But... again, I think he needs to articulate it, because whether he likes it or not...
And people wouldn't get hung up on it, too, if he wasn't like, I don't care.
Right. And whether he likes it or not,
care.
He's a leader on this defense.
Yeah.
He's a centerpiece on this defense. He's probably their best pass rusher. And that's probably part of the problem, that I don't know other people are doing their jobs very well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Uche has stepped up in light of the Judon trade and other guys.
Stepping up big this
year?
No,
I don't think so.
Right, yeah.
And so Keon White, I do think, isn't getting a lot of help, and that probably makes it easier for others to say, well, he was really dominant the first 2 weeks. Why don't we take him away and see if anybody else steps up, see if Uche can beat us, see if Wise can beat us. But you can't go with the attitude. This reminds me, Ellis Hobbs did this once early in his career, the cornerback.
I remember him.
Where I think he broke on a ball and gave up a touchdown in an early game. And Bill, we literally went from a press conference with Bill where Bill said, well, his technique wasn't good. He's got to do some things a little differently there. Boom, go to Ellis Hobbs in the locker room. Are there things you're going to do differently? Nah, I'm going to play that the same way every time. And I was like,
good.
Well, Bill just said you should do things differently. He's like, nah, I got to play the game the way I play the game. And
no,
it's
you
like,
don't.
I mean, there's that fine line between confidence, cockiness, and then detriment to yourself and your team. And the attitude that he expressed verbally, now, whether he misspoke or not and would like to have it back, mm-hmm. the attitude he expressed verbally is detrimental to him, both himself and his team.
Agreed, 100%. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. We'll get to your Patriots-related phone calls, and we'll reset on May Day coming up on Sunday. What did Drake May learn weeks 1 through 5, and how long until he's comfortable? We'll get to all that with your phone calls right after this.